welcome to another edition of Visions. I am Yudali Vikram Ashby, and today I want to say Happy Easter to everyone who celebrates. In this edition of Visions, I'm going to share two stories of two wonderful, beautiful ladies who are both blind and deaf. The first story I will share with you is from Habin Girma out of the United States of America. And I believe that once you listen to her story, you too will feel very inspired. And I hope it motivates you to do more with yourself, not only for yourself and your family, but for your community. So take a listen.
Habin Girma, the daughter of Eritrean refugees, is often introduced as the first deafblind person to graduate from Harvard Law School, and she did indeed do that. But her story is much deeper, filled with remarkable adventures from scaling icebergs, learning to surf, and an extraordinary moment with former President Obama at the White House. Her new book, Habin, The Deafblind Woman Who Conquered Harvard Law, is part memoir and part advocacy for opportunities with people with disabilities. Habin Girma is here with translator Robert Sini and her dog Milo, who's so quiet you may not even notice that he's here. Good to see you.
Thanks for welcoming all of us, including Milo.
Milo is sacked out right now. He's having a sleep. Habin, first of all, would you explain how the three of us are communicating?
I'm deafblind, and I have a little bit of vision and hearing, but I choose to identify as deafblind because deafblindness frames the issue in terms of tactile information, pro-tactile philosophy, and touch is my strongest skill. So all my life, I've been thinking about what are the ways I can use my skills to build connections with people. And I have a device that creates Braille. On the bottom are Braille dots. I'm running my fingers over the dots to feel the letters. And this is connected wirelessly to a keyboard. And Robert is typing on the keyboard. I'm reading the words as you speak. And this is a way to connect with people, to access more information.
I understand that you hear high-frequency sounds and that that was part of your development of speech. Can you explain how that worked as well?
Yeah, there are lots of different kinds of hearing loss. I have low-frequency loss and some high-frequency hearing. Speech intelligence is in the high frequencies, so it's slightly easier for me to speak compared to most deaf people because I can catch some of the high frequencies. And then I've also had lots of lessons from teachers, voice coaches, and working on my pronunciation and speech.
So one of the things that I learned is that there is a big variety of abilities within the deafblind community. Can you explain that so we can all understand a bit better?
People are adaptive and innovative. We're always looking for solutions to connect and access information. Some people use visual sign language, using whatever vision they have. Some people can see it close up, some within a certain range. Others will use tactile, so they'll put their hands over the person's hands and feel the signs. Then there's print-on-palm, where you write letters on the palm. There's Braille, which I use. So the deafblind community uses lots of different communication tools.
Tell me a bit about your growing up, your relationship with your parents, and your own, your own grappling with how to use technology, your mindset, and other tools to reach beyond what were your physical challenges.
On the one hand, my parents were telling me you can do anything, no barriers, everything non-disabled kids do, you should be able to do. And there were certain things they wanted me to do that I didn't want to do, like house chores. But they insisted, no, you have to do house chores just like every other kid. And in Eritrean Ethiopian culture, a lot of times it's the woman who do the cooking. And I really resisted cooking because I did not want to be forced to do gendered activity. So I told them, I will do activities that the guys do. And my mom thought about it and it's like, okay, follow me. So she took me over to a table where my uncles and other male cousins were working. And she said, Habin's gonna join you. And I told her, wait a minute, what's that smell? I sniffed the air. There was a really odd smell. And she says, they're chopping meat for the stew. The one time the men were cooking, she makes me join them. So I sit down and join them. They were chopping a bull that was slaughtered for a wedding. So I joined them, and because my parents expected me to do everything, I could handle knives. I reached into a pile, used a knife, using my hands to feel the meat and use the knife to cut the pieces. All around me, they were talking. I couldn't hear what they were saying. And it's actually really painful when you feel exclusion within your own family. I could hear enough to hear that they were talking and laughing, but I couldn't catch the words. And I felt left out and excluded. I hate feeling left out. I hate exclusion. I hate cooking.
You were the valedictorian at your high school, correct?
I was valedictorian in high school. I actually did not know the term valedictorian. My parents came from Eritrea and Ethiopia. So there were a lot of things in American culture that we didn't know. I knew I should work hard if I wanted to have opportunities after high school. So I worked hard, but I didn't know that people would be recognized by titles like valedictorian.
You went to college here in the Northwest, correct?
Yes. I went to college at Lewis and Clark in Portland, Oregon.
And what made you want to go to law school?
I've encountered so many barriers, and it's frustrating. At the beginning of my life, high school, I just tolerated a lot of the barriers. Maybe this is what disabled people are supposed to do. Just accept what we're offered. Then there was an incident at college. Lewis and Clark did a fantastic job providing me access to my course materials. Textbooks were in Braille. Exams were in Braille. There was just one problem. The cafeteria had a menu, and I couldn't access the menu. There were about 6 different stations. As a vegetarian, it's really frustrating to not know what the food choices are. I'd pick a station at random, get in line, wait maybe 20 minutes, get food, try the food, and discover an unpleasant surprise. It was really frustrating.
So what did you do?
I asked the manager to provide accessible menus. Braille, posted online, email it to me. I have assistive technology that allows me to use email and websites. And he said, we're too busy. We have over 1,000 students. We don't have time to do this. So I tolerated the situation for several months until finally I said, I need to do something. If I don't do anything, nothing will change. Did research, talked to people, and then went back to the manager and said, I'm actually not asking you to do a favor. I'm asking you to comply with the law. It's required under the Americans with Disabilities Act to provide access for students with disabilities. And if you don't provide me access, I'm going to take legal action.
And thus a law career was born?
And a law career was born. After that, they agreed to make the menus accessible. I started getting access to the cafeteria menus. Life became delicious.
I'm all with you because eating is the most important thing I do all day, most days. Let me ask you this. You've learned to surf. You've climbed on icebergs. You've spoken with President Obama, who I thought gave a great example by typing with you and participating in the technology that allows you to communicate directly. My question for you is how does fear and perseverance come together in your life? You must be afraid of some things, and yet you're terribly free in your mind to imagine ways in which you can do things that others might not try to do with no physical disability.
I wanted to go to Mali, West Africa to help build a school, and my parents were scared for my safety, so they tapped into all my fears. They told me there are snakes, you could get malaria, you could get kidnapped. And these are African parents trying to scare me about Africa. So instead, I told them, you know what? There are risks. There are snakes in California. There's snakes. There's the potential to run into a snake anywhere. I don't want to stay home out of fear that something will happen. I want to live a life of adventures. When I'm deafblind, the only way to access the world is to physically connect with it. I'd rather go dancing rather than sit at home and read about dancing. So it's curiosity that pushes me to keep seeking new experiences. And also being innovative and thoughtful and trying to create solutions.
You've done a beautiful job with that. We're looking right now at videotape of you surfing. And I wonder if you might just say a word to other kids who are growing up encountering physical disabilities or challenges and offer a word of encouragement.
Don't be afraid of being different. Celebrate the ways we are different. When I was younger, my goal was to be cool. And in middle school, we're often told to hide the ways we're different. But that's not helpful. Find out your strengths. Embrace who you are. Accept who you are. And if you have questions, pursue answers. Often other people with disabilities can help find solutions and help mentor you through the process.
Haben, thank you so much.
I have been following Haben since I first learned about her via YouTube, and only recently she shared her thoughts and feelings about a movie shown on Netflix. It's called Crib Camp, and I would want to encourage all of you to look for this movie, Crib Camp. I really take a good look. Look at it for the enjoyment of it, but also look at it for the information that you can gather. The second story is from Heather Lawson out of Australia. And again, she is both blind and deaf. And I think her story also is very fascinating, as it speaks to many emotions that all of us experience, whether we have a disability or not. So take a listen.
My name is Heather Lawson, and I live in a dark and silent world. I can't see and I can't hear. The voice you're hearing is not mine. It's my interpreter, Marie. And I communicate through tactile Auslan, which is Australian Sign Language. I touch the signs to hear them, so it's all through touch. I use haptics as well. Haptics is just giving me an extra message. So you could draw on my back to explain some scenery. People use it overseas. It's only started recently in Australia, but it was originated in Finland. When I do presentations, I have to ask my interpreter to do people's expressions on my arm. So if the audience are laughing, they will scratch my arm, and I know that the audience is laughing. It gives me emotional messages too. So a smile, a frown, an O is for amazed, a scratch is people are laughing, a hit is like, oh, come on. A question mark is people are puzzled. I was born deaf, and as I was growing up, I started to lose my sight, and slowly over time it happened. I didn't lose it overnight. I could cope as a deaf person, but as a deaf-blind person, I didn't know how to cope because I had no skills. I grew up on a farm in Victoria. We used to help our dad milk the cows, and we used to help him feed the hay to the cows. It was really lovely. When I was losing my sight, it was terrible. I hated myself. I wanted to commit suicide. I was really thinking about killing myself because it was an awful time. I was so depressed. I was really down. When I asked for help, when I started losing my sight, I asked a welfare staff member for help, and they knew about Usher's syndrome. And they said to me, "You've got Usher's." And I said, "What does that mean?" So they gave me some information to read over. And it was the same troubles and symptoms that I'd been having. And it made me really angry because I wished that I knew early on. When I was 28, I decided to move to Melbourne. And that happened after I was blind. and I learned to use a cane and braille. And I learned to travel and I became independent. Deafblind Victorians are run by deafblind people themselves, and it's a self-advocacy group. We aim for advocating for equal rights for deafblind people and to be involved in the community. Hi, I'll be chairing the meeting today. I'm Heather Lawson. I do odd bits and pieces here for work, but it's really difficult to find work because I am deafblind. So just a few things for today's meeting, but two things we'll focus on. The Deafblind Communication Book and how we can improve on that. And we will talk a little bit about the Deafblind World Workshop. So is everybody happy with that? I have a communication guide. Communication guide is my eyes and ears. So Fiona is deaf herself. She can help me to be involved in that community. I had to advocate for 5 years for government funding, and 5 years I failed, but I finally got some funds from the government. It just made my life a little bit easier. When I started losing my sight, my sense of smell was okay, but I could still see a little bit. But once I started losing that sight and it was deteriorating, my sense of smell just became a lot stronger. I can smell, I think, yellow or white. Do you have any here or pink ones that I could try and smell? I think I'm a little bit out of practice, but I know yellow ones are very strong. They have a very strong smell. Purple ones are strong, but they have a different smell. I like yellow ones. They're beautiful. They're strong. I love clothes shopping. If I've got something up home that's out of fashion, then I'll just buy something new that is in fashion. I just feel the material. If it's a three-quarter or a short sleeve, I only know the feel of the clothes. So I have some braille on my clothes. So there's a little braille on my button. It says LB. So I know that these jeans are a light blue colour. So Usher's is a genetic condition. I have a brother and sister with Usher's. There is three of us. I was the first person in my family to lose my sight. Alan, my brother, and my sister Jeanette, they were probably 15 years later than me, but now we are the same. So through my parents, they had 5 children. So 3 of us became deafblind.
I don't think I've ever met another family with quite a similar sort of situation.
It's a very involved family, really. Not, yeah, we won't go into the full lot of it, but... Very unique.
We could be
family.
Here all day. To have Usher's, you need an Usher gene from, so you get the 2 genes from each parent, and you need an Usher's gene from each parent to have an Usher's child. So mum has the 2 genes, meaning that I would have inherited one of those genes, which makes me a character. So I have 1 Usher's gene and 1 non-Usher's gene. So meaning if my husband, unbeknownst to me, had an Usher's gene, then we could have had children with Usher's. So there's a possibility that Maddie has an Usher's gene that she's inherited from me that we don't know about. So, at the time when I was pregnant, doctors did ask me if I wanted the genetic testing done to find out. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? If so my kids got Usher's, I'm going to get rid of a child because they've got Usher's. I couldn't do that. That would just be going against my family. It just, wouldn't feel right.
We grew up with very selfless parents. You know, they were just absolutely family-focused, with the uniqueness of the family, for starters, would have caused that. And one of the lessons we all learnt very quickly was to become very unselfish. And the needs of Heather, Alan and Jeanette were far outweighed anything that we could, we needed.
Where's Maddie? Maddie's here. Are you good? She told me she's well. She's grown. I remember when you were so small, now you've grown up. My goodness.
Oh, there's 4 people. I'll tell old Tricker. There's actually 4 people swimming in the water. you can imagine just how hard it was. It's all trying to communicate with everyone.
Yeah.
We were always taught to lip read with them when we were growing up with them and things like that, more so than a lot of fluent sign language. We've got our own family language. Yeah, so we're not as fluent, and sometimes it's a lot easier for these guys to get through to them a lot quicker. Now, especially at funerals and things like that, you know, we've had some massive family funerals, and if without the help from Able Australia, we would never have got through it. Go to the right hand.
I remember when, you know, with the three deaf of us in the family, we were quite oral with signing, but when we lost our sight, we didn't use that oral communication anymore because we couldn't see. So I think that really impacted on our family. They had to learn a new way of communicating with us.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, very much. Yeah. It was a learning for everybody. Everybody learned. It took a little bit of time to learn.
At the same time, deafblind people can seem quite angry, but they're just learning that they have to accept what's going on, and it can be frustrating for me. At my time, it was really bad. In the late 80s, early 90s, the stage that I went through, it was quite negative. I was a very angry person because I wanted support, I wanted help, but there was nowhere for me to go. If you're negative and angry, it can give you mental health troubles. But at the same time, I did have help from friends, but it was difficult because they had families, they worked, which made it quite limiting, and it was really difficult for me, and I would have to find other ways of doing things by myself. But once I received those funds, my personality growed. I was able to get back in the community again.
You know, Heather, since she went to Melbourne, that's when the big change come for her. We could see her at the family farm sinking into a bigger hole. You know, nothing was happening for her, and there was probably not a lot of bright future for her back then. And then Able Australia sort of come along and all that type of thing and got her to Melbourne, and what that woman hasn't done, you know, she just leaves me for dead.
Carla is a good friend of mine, and I've known her for many years. You know, she is deaf, but at the same time, we both enjoy the same things. You know, I need to learn how to be strong and assertive, and I've learnt that from Carla. We go on holidays together. It's been my dream for so many years to meet an elephant. And 4 years ago, that finally happened, and that was with Carla. And we were feeding them. It was really, really lovely. There was three elephants. Got to feed them. They were wet, and I got dirty. But I didn't care. It was really lovely, and it was great fun. Being blind, touch is really important for me because I don't have any vision. So I have the right to touch things. It's really important part of my life. So with my clay work, it just helps me understand a picture of what things are. So I see that through touch. But I thought that I could never do clay work. I thought it would be difficult, but it's quite easy. So this is a new hobby of mine. Because I don't have a TV at home. So, you know, this is something that I can do. I'd like to do some clay hands and have eyes on the palms of the hands because it's like my eyes are on my hands. So at home I've been making lots of kangaroos. I remember what a kangaroo looks like, so I remember that image before I was blind. So clay work has been helping me to enjoy things. We'll be right back.
Hello. How are you? Good. Body's good.
A bit sore.
Stretch. Lovely. So we'll start with a walk today.
Yep.
Good. Both Heather and Marie have taught me really basic language so that we can communicate in exercise terms so that she can now come once a week by herself.
If I meet people who don't sign, I don't really enjoy that. If people don't understand the deafblind way. So if I'm involved with friends, you know, it doesn't matter who they are. If they have an understanding of deafblindness and I'm comfortable with them, that's fine. But I don't want pity. Then there's people who say, oh, you know, that's so unfortunate that you are the way you are. So it's good to have a good relationship, you know, a friendly relationship with people.
She likes to make up her own routines with rollers, weights, balls. She'll tend to come in on a Monday and say, I did this at home on the weekend as an exercise, is that okay?
I used to feel quite flat and sore because I use tactile signing. I get quite tight in my shoulders, so the gym's really helped me to become strong. Deafblind people are very isolated. You can't share your news with other people because there's no information. Or sometimes it's the same old thing and we have nothing to share because we are alone. If I'm with someone, they can tell me things that are going on and they can tell me their news and what they've seen. But if there's nothing coming in, it's very isolating. Communication is so important for me. It just helps me understand the environment. Before I was blind, I remember things. I remember the river, the bridge, the cars and the trams going past. I have that in my memory, and I know behind me is the station. There's people walking past. But for people who are born deafblind, it would be hard for them to understand. It would be really hard work explaining everything. Deafblind people have so many barriers and limitations, and without funding, it's really difficult. But we need to advocate for change. It's not easy, but we need to do it, and then we can break through those barriers. Before I was blind, I thought I would miss things. I was quite shy and I had bad eyesight, but once I built my confidence, I was able to do what I dreamed that I always wanted to do, skydiving. And I finally did that. I jumped out of a plane and I tumbled through the air at 2,000 feet. It was a free fall. I was flying through the air. I could really feel that wind on my body. And then when I landed on the ground, I was so happy. I haven't yet gone to space. I can't wait. I'll have to find a guide who is brave enough to go with me.
No, as both Habin and Heather are showing us, we too can celebrate life and remember that we have been born for a purpose. We can contribute not only to our own lives and the lives of our families, but to our society. And this is my message for you today, to look at how you can give and contribute to your own development as well as others around you. You have been listening to Visions, and I say thank you for listening. So next week, bring a friend along to listen and encourage others to share their thoughts and ideas for the development of this program. You can reach me on 1-246-269-9660 or via STARCOM 1-246-430-7300. You can also email me at visionsbarbados@gmail.com, and you can check this out on VOB929.com website. Look for the podcast link, and once you find Visions, you can listen to this and past episodes. So until next week, continue to be safe and love your neighbor.